I'm grateful to be here. I got to know Raynaud and Brooke, and you know, you're usually lucky if you get to speak at a church once. And he said to me, he says, you know, why don't you come 2 weeks in a row? So I feel very blessed, very honored to be with you to talk about the Middle East, to tell you a little bit about the history of the Middle East, and especially how it affected my family, and how I came from the Middle East to America, and from a secular Muslim family to Christ. Now, any discussion of the Middle East is going to be circumscribed. Oh, it's working. Good. It's going to be circumscribed by the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It dominates any discussion of the region, and we'll certainly be talking about it tonight. It's important for us to understand because if we want to engage the people of the Middle East, if we want to engage that region and tell them about the true nature of our faith, we need to understand the relevant issues there. And the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is at the heart of it. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about the ramifications of it. Obviously, we know about the national security ramifications for the United States with the continuation of this conflict. That it's been going on for so long is one of the justifications for terrorism aimed at our nation. And again, if we're going to be effective in communicating the gospel, the true nature of our faith to the people there, we need to understand it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you a story. And the story is going to be about just a regular family and a regular kid growing up over there and of the events of that area and how our lives intersected with the history of the Middle East. And then I'm going to tell you about the ministry that my wife and I and others work on over there called the Bethlehem Christmas Project, where we work with Israeli, Palestinian, and American believers to deliver Christmas gifts to orphans, children with special needs, and children suffering from post-traumatic stress. We should have enough time for QA, but if we don't, Q&A, if we don't, we've got next week, so no worries. So our story begins in a minute. Ah, there we go. Our story begins in 1948 at the creation of the State of Israel. When Israel was created, about 750,000 people became refugees. Let me put that in perspective for you. That's roughly equivalent to the population of Oakland, Winter Garden, Ocoee, Orlando, and also Miami becoming homeless overnight. When the Palestinians became refugees, they went to the neighboring areas. Lebanon got about 10% of them. Some went to Egypt, some went to Syria, and some went to Jordan. Okay, there's Jordan right there. And after some time, these refugees, who had quite a bit of popular support among the people, especially after the 1967 war when Israel captured the West Bank, these refugees began to challenge the authority of the king. And the PLO was rising in popularity, and they wanted to have a political say in Jordan. And King Hussein, right there, was not going to have any of that. So in what was called the Black September campaign, he ousted the PLO, and they went to Lebanon, which, for reference, this is Israel right here. You got the West Bank right there, the Gaza Strip, and that's Lebanon, where I'm from. Now, Lebanon already had an unstable political situation. The government was made up of Christians, Sunni Muslims, and Shiites. And when you talk about Lebanon, you usually hear about the Lebanese Civil War that happened in the 70s and 80s, and the word that you hear is sectarian. Sectarian violence, you know, religious violence, and certainly that was a component of it, but the Lebanese Civil War was primarily a war over control of Lebanon. And what you had was Christians killing Christians, you had Muslims killing Muslims, and you had Muslims killing Christians and Druze killing Christians, and then for added fun, you know, we had Jews coming over in 1982. So when you think of the Lebanese Civil War, try not to think of it as a religious holy war. It's a war for control of Lebanon. And now, when the PLO came there in 1970, they also enjoyed the popularity that they enjoyed in Jordan, and they also received support from the population in Lebanon, which had all these refugees pouring in. The Falangist militia, which was predominantly made up of the Maronite Christians, did not consider themselves Arab and were very pro-Western, and they felt that, you know, we had these Palestinians causing trouble in Jordan, and now they're coming here to Lebanon, and they did not want them there. There were other groups in Lebanon that felt, great, now with the PLO here, we can get rid of the Falangists and have Lebanon for ourselves. Now, my family were members of the PLO. I can't exactly tell you what they did, but I can tell you that they were involved in the PLO. You have to remember that Lebanon was a young country, and the map of the Middle East in terms of modern nation states was very young. We got our independence in 1946, Israel in 1948. The whole Middle East is fairly young. And the idea was, you know, that the map was still being drawn. Now, as these various political groups vied for control of Lebanon, Syria came in. Syria's right there. And, there's Israel there. Syria right there. And you had all these groups vying for control. Now, when the Syrians came in, they came in to stabilize Lebanon. At the same time, they came in to have Lebanon just be a vassal state of Syria. Now, why am I telling you all this? We're in a church, right? This is not CNN. The reason I'm telling you this is because you have to see this through my eyes growing up. So I'm a kid. At this time, I was about 3 years old. I didn't really quite know exactly what was going on, but certainly all this affected my life as I grew up. So try to see all of this as through the eyes of a kid. Now, when we were 3 years old, we needed to get out of Lebanon. Because when the Syrians came, they were going to root out the PLO, and they were killing any pro-Palestinian people there. So my family came to the United States, not to practice jihad, not to spread Islam, but simply to get out of Dodge. And we knew that there was peace and prosperity here, and this is where we came. We stayed here for 3 years, returned in 1979. Now, 1979, the civil war that was going on got really bad. From there on, when the word sectarian applies more and more, there were if you were Sunni, you were Sunni. If you were Shiite, you were Shiite. If you were Maronite, you were Maronite. Now, also during that time, even though Syria had made this attempt to root out the PLO, they were not exactly successful. The PLO was increasing its attacks on Israel, and the Israelis figured that what we need to do, and this is Israel here. Okay, that's Israel there. And what they figured to do with their Prime Minister Menachem Begin, which is right here, the idea that they had in mind was, we are going to end the attacks against our nation and we're going to secure it. Two, we are going to secure a peace treaty with Lebanon. Three, we're going to create a Christian country in our land. So what they did is they attacked. They allied themselves with the Falangists, the Christian Maronite militia. Now, again, when I say Christian Maronite militia, you have to remember Christian and militia are sort of, they're dichotomous words. They should not be going, they should not be going together. But, the Israelis aligned themselves with the Falangists, and they stepped into a very dirty civil war. What we got from that was the massacre at Sabra and Shatila, which is burned into the mind of every Lebanese person. This is the tamest picture that I could find. The Israelis surrounded the camp. They knew fully well what was going on. And the militia went in and slaughtered about 2,000 men, women, and children. It was an international incident. It was all over the news. And it's something that every Lebanese will remember. It was the commander at the time was Ariel Sharon. He was removed, returned later to become prime minister of Israel. And something which annoys and frustrates every Arab is that President Bush called him a man of peace. So now, again, what does this have to do with anything? Now, you have to remember, I'm a kid. I'm about 6 years old, and I'm watching my country tear itself apart. This is 1982 now when the Israelis came. I'm standing outside of a balcony, and I have one tear in my eye, and I told my mom that I wish I was dead, that it would just be better to die. When we went back to Lebanon in 79, I was convinced that my dad had sent us there to die. So what I saw was Christians killing Muslims, killing Jews, and all I knew about religion was that God and religion is just war, and I wanted nothing to do with it. I couldn't wait to get out of there. At one point, we were in the shelters. Bombs were landing very close. I went into shock. My mom slapped me, turned to my father, and said, "I do not care. If we have to go to Israel, we're going to Israel. Take us out of West Beirut." West Beirut is where the Muslims live. East Beirut is where the Christians live. So we went to East Beirut to escape. There was no respite there. And we ended up going to some of the villages. There was also no respite there. And then in the end, about 3 years later, because the situation was going so badly, we ended up leaving and coming to the United States the second time. And I remember lying in bed in Lebanon. How many people remember the Madonna song, Lucky Star? It's okay to admit that you... Admit it, come on. Come on. Oh, okay, so six people were in the 80s. Okay. So, But I remember, like, Lucky Star, I mean, I would sit in my bed and look out at the sky and go, I cannot wait to leave. I cannot wait to go to America. I cannot wait to leave this country. I just cannot wait. And in 1985, which came true, I was about 12 years old, we came to America, and I was elated. I had what you would call your basic high school life. You know, I wasn't, again, you know, we didn't come for jihad or you know, the spreading of Islam. Certainly we believed in Islam. Certainly, you know, Ramadan and you know, we went to the mosque on occasion, but we weren't, you know, we weren't here to Islamicize, you know, America. Even though we lived in Dearborn, still the goal was not, you know, I went to high school in Dearborn, Michigan. I went to the University of Michigan, Dearborn, and then I, woo! All right, cool. So, yeah, so, I mean, I what I wanted to do was run as far away from the Middle East as I could, run as far away from this conflict as I could. I knew I was Arab, I knew I was Muslim, but thank God I'm an Arab American. I was so happy. Now, I lived a fairly honest, let me see where I'm, where am I here? I never forget. Huh, no, okay, cool. All right, I lived a fairly honest, I'm trying to gauge the time. I lived a fairly honest, you know, atheist life as I went into college and high school, and that is, I made fun of everybody who believed anything, and I made myself miserable with having as much fun as I thought it was as I could, and one day I turned up to the sky and I said, God, okay, if you're there, I don't need anything major. Okay, I don't need anything major. I just need something. Just let me know that you're there. Careful what you ask for. I went home on vacation, and one of my friends handed me a Bible, and she said, you got to read this. I said, yeah, okay. You know, I was studying comparative human and animal cognition and evolutionary behavior psychology. Lots of words that make it sound really cool. I got to play with animals and you know, work on evolution, you know, study evolution from a psychological perspective. Development of the mind, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So this person hands me a Bible and proceeds to tell me how evolution is a bunk. And I'm like, okay, are you talking about macroevolution or microevolution? Well, I don't believe in that. So I'm like, look, you have no idea what you're talking about. Okay, thank you for this Bible. And then she starts telling me this crazy story. She had this dream, this vision where she was in her bed, it was late at night, and there was a war going on between angels and demons, and she couldn't move, and she felt this presence holding her down. It was breathing on her, and the only thing that she could do was pray in the name of Jesus, and then she was awake, and everything was great. And I looked at her, and I thought, you are cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. I looked at her and I said, you know, like, we were at a restaurant, you know, we go, check, please. That's all I could think. Now, it was a friend of mine. I mean, I knew this person to be otherwise reasonable, okay? Now, I happened to meet Jenny, who's my wife right here. Say hi. So, I happened to meet Jenny, and I also knew that she was a reasonable person, but somehow she was also one of these crazy Christians as well. And, you know, I'm talking to Jenny, and I said to her, I said, yeah, you know, I had lunch with my friend Michelle from high school, and she gave me a Bible. She told me the story, this crazy story. And I start telling her the story, right? And then Jenny starts turning white. And I'm going, what's wrong? Nothing. And then she starts asking me, well, did this happen? Did she see this? Did she experience that? And I'm like, yeah. Did you go to Churchill High School by any chance? You know, which was no. Did you know Michelle? And I'm freaking out at this point. And actually, like, I started to understand that she and this person had the same vision. I'm probably the most skeptical Christian you'll ever meet. You know, you say, oh, miracle, hallelujah. I'm like, I need to see the MRIs. You know, I was healed. How do you know? Are you sure it wasn't like some kind of cyclical pattern where, you know, it's a chronic syndrome, you know, that it manifests itself, you know. So, you know, but when this happened, I was like, boom, I knew that that was the answer to my question. God, give me something small. And I had two thoughts. This is freaky. I should have asked for something cooler. So if you're going to ask God for something, you know, just go for the gusto, man. Like, dude, I need Jesus Lamborghini or something, you know. But seriously disturbed me. So I said, all right, so okay, so they had this experience. There's a lot of logical, reasonable, night terror type of explanations for this, but this is something beyond my understanding, and I just feel in my heart that this is the answer to my request. What I'm going to do is I'm going to read this little Bible that she gave me, and I'm going to start at the first page. And I opened it up, and it was like, in the beginning. And I'm like, yes, in the beginning. So good place to start. And then we went to Genesis. I got to Exodus. By the time I got off the plane, remember, I was on vacation in Michigan. By the time I got off the plane, I had gotten through Genesis and Exodus. I got to Leviticus, and I was just like, oh, cool. Okay. I've done everything. Well, okay, not the stuff with Anne. You know, it was just, I'm like, all right, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to skip over, and I'm going to go to find out about this Jesus person. That was literally my thought. And then went to the, did I press that by mistake? Oh, okay, cool. So then I started reading the New Testament, and I read the parables. And, you know, mind you, growing up, I knew nothing at all. I just knew Christians were, you know, we had some Christian friends, and there was also the Christian militias. All I knew about Christians is that they had some crazy beliefs, and they worshipped Mary. And they were into statues, and that just was wrong. And they had images, and in Islam, we have no images of anything. And Christians are just these very confused, strange, little, odd people who some of them want to kill us. I mean, that was it. And, you know, and I grew up in the, I mean, my high school years were in the United States. So, joy to the world, the Lord is, what? Like, who? I mean, I would literally wonder who's the Lord that they're singing about, you know? Earth, you know, so anyway, so that's not my favorite song, but you know, I learned about Jesus, and I was blown away about who Jesus was, and the message of redemption, and the offer of salvation, and the truth, and the simplicity of his message, made an incredible impact on me. But still, that was not enough, because every religion had a story. The Mormons have a story, the Muslims have a story, the Jews have a story. Everybody has a story, so I started digging into the extra-biblical evidence. To make a long story short, in the end, I said, okay. Remember, I'm the most skeptical Christian you'll ever meet. I said, okay, I will not disbelieve. I will believe this until I can disprove it, which is, any good scientist will tell you, that's how you get anything accomplished. So I said, I will believe this until I can disprove it, and I'm going to try. And that's how I came to faith. And then I entered the church, and then people started telling me these crazy things like, is your heart on fire for God? And I'd be like, God so loved the world that, you know, he sent his one and only son. And well, are you burning in town? Like, no, I don't. It was a strange language. And I just said, you know, I'm like, okay, you know, you can change your organization, or you can change your organization. You know what I mean? I had no option. The church was the only organization I had to go to. But, I mean, look, I loved going to church. I felt like every sermon was written for me. Every song was written for me. And I you know, entering into the church as an Arab was sort of odd, especially, you know, my first experience of really being really strange was going into, in 2001, actually in 2000, no, 2001, it was 2001, our church had a prophecy night on Christmas, on New Year's Eve, and I thought it's going to be a party. And then the pastor launched into this whole sermon on the Middle East, how all the Muslims of all of the ways wanted to kill Israel, and Israel always has to defend itself, and the Palestinians need to just get out of there. They never belonged there anyway. And I'm thinking, yeah, well, where did they belong? They didn't belong. I mean, they came to us in Lebanon, so I knew they were there. But, you know, I found that in typical evangelical churches, there was complete misunderstanding of the Middle East. And I remember going to bed that night going, well, maybe I should do something about it. And I was like, nah, there's just no way God wants me to do that. And then two things happened. One is 9/11. 9/11 happened. I got really mad, and I wanted to join the FBI. I'm fluent in Arabic. I'm a computer programmer. I figured if they could use help, I could provide it. Started researching it, downloaded the application, was ready to go. And something about it just never felt right to me. And then at that time also, everybody all of a sudden became an expert on Islam. You know, the politically incorrect guide to Islam, the truth about Muhammad, you know. And then I found that people were linking now Islam with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, that Israeli-Palestinian conflict was all about Islam. And you had people saying, I was a jihadi in the PLO, which made absolutely no sense, because the PLO was always a secular organization. Some of the organizations that were fighting against Israel, like the PFLP, were started and are continued to this day to be run by Christians. you know, farewell Israel, the revolt of Islam. And I thought, okay, people don't get it. Islam is not a monolith. Islam is not, Islam is, or Muslims believe. There's a great deal of, there's a nuanced set of beliefs in Islam. And I wanted to help. But I thought, I don't know, it's 2001. The second thing that happened was in 2006, the Israeli-Hezbollah war. And and I could not understand why I cared so much. I had gotten out of Lebanon. I was happy to be out. I was a Christian. I was in America. Had a fairly good job, beautiful wife, children. But I was glued to the TV. And I did the only thing I could do, which is I wrote an article. Force not achieving ends for either side. Nobody tweeted it, I know, but that was before Twitter, okay? And somebody read it. One of my friends read it, and he said, oh, man, Ali, you know, well, what you should do now, I need you to meet this other guy. His name is Chuck. Chuck just came back from Israel, has a heart for the Middle East, has a heart for Israel, goes to Israel all the time. You got to meet him. You guys have got to get together. And I thought, great, all I need right now, and in my emotional state, is another Christian Zionist who's gonna, you know, no, pray for Israel, and does not understand the Middle East, doesn't understand that there's a church there, doesn't understand that we need to be praying for this region, doesn't understand that we need to engage, doesn't understand that we need to be working on peacemaking and reconciliation. And my friend said, well, okay, look, if you actually believe all the stuff that you wrote and published, then I think you should meet with this guy. If not, you know, don't write anymore. So he's like, fine, but he's paying for lunch. And so I met with him, and the first thing he said to me, he said, you need to go to Israel. I said, I have not even been back to Lebanon. I haven't even forgiven my people yet. You want me to forgive them? That's what I thought. I didn't say that because, you know, I was Christian, and I needed to be forgiving. And besides, I had written this long treatise on, you know, how we need to be working on peacemaking, you know. But, you know, in my heart, I mean, I felt like, yes, this is what I should do. Gosh, I cannot imagine doing this. But this is what I should do. And this is the power of the gospel when God says, this is what you believe. Well, this is what I believe. And you can't fight with God. So I said, okay. We prayed about it for a while. Talked to Jenny. In the end, said, okay, well, I'm going to go. I said, but if I'm going to go, I want to meet with Israelis. I don't want the tour. I don't want to see Jerusalem and the churches. I want to meet people. And I want to meet a lot of Israelis, because I want to talk about the conflict, and I want to understand how we can practically, you know, what can we do to help solve this conflict? And he says, okay, fine. And then I happen to also meet a group there called Musalaha. Musalaha is the Arabic word for reconciliation. This is what they do. They put Israeli and Palestinian people, groups together. They take the youth. They give them a camel. Now, keep this in mind. Two people, one camel. They give them a destination in the desert, and they give them a camel enough for one person, but they give them water enough for two people. And then say, you got to get there. Now, what has to happen is the Israeli and the Palestinian have to talk, because they need to decide who's going to ride the camel first. And from there, they begin a discussion. They begin to have a conversation. When they arrive at their destination, now mind you, these are Israeli and Palestinian believers. Musalaha will do reconciliation work with these people. They will have the Palestinians write the Israeli narrative for the 20th century, and they say, okay, now imagine you're a Jew, and you just came out of the Holocaust, and you have the opportunity to go to the land that you have always longed for. Write me 500 words on that and be prepared tomorrow to defend that position. Palestinian has to do that. They go to the Jew and they go, okay, laughing, okay. Here's what I want you to do. Now, imagine that you're living in your village and you're an Arab. You're 90% of the population. 10% of the population wants 50% of the land. You say, what are you going to say? And what's going to happen? Tell me the story of what happens when you get thrown out of your country. 500 words and be prepared to defend that. And what they do is they say, the point that I'm trying to teach is we are one body in Christ. Our mission on this planet is to be salt and light. Blessed are the peacemakers. Our mission is to make disciples of the world. The world is not interested in what we have to say. The world is interested in what we do. If we are between our peoples, if we are between Muslims and Jews, how can we tell them about Jesus and the God who reconciled us to them, to himself, if we can't work together? If we're not leading in this, how can anyone believe a word that we say? And I thought, that is it. This is it. This is what I got to do. This is what I got to do. This is the only way that I can fight, you know, Islamophobia and this misunderstanding of the Middle East and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and all these political complications. And this is the only way I can evangelize, because believe me, you know, you can't go down there to the Middle East and go, you know, here's some pamphlets and, you know, stand in the streets of Jerusalem. People look at you like, do you have any idea of my life? And then most people try to engage, and it just deteriorates once the topic gets onto politics, which, you know, in the United States, we don't, you know, in good company, you don't talk about religion and politics. In the Middle East, you first thing you talk about is religion and politics. So what I wanted to do was to demonstrate the gospel. If you ever hear me talk, you'll never hear me about spreading the gospel or bringing people to Christ, because I'm not the Holy Spirit. He does that. What I do is I demonstrate the gospel with my life. And that's what I'm trying to get people to do here in America. And I don't want you, when I say that, I don't want you to think, oh, you know, Americans just don't get it. No, Americans, you guys do get it. But what I'm saying is, as an Arab, this is my constitution, this is my heritage, this is my background. This is what I was created to do. And now my job is to ask you to come and get involved and lead the way in peacemaking. Let the world look at our lives through our ministry and go, my gosh, something is different about these Christians. Not only are they here telling us about Jesus, they've been here telling us about Jesus since Jesus was around. And, you know, honestly, Jesus came to us first, so, you know, we've kind of been telling them about Jesus. But, you know, but really, you know, I want people to look at Christians and go, my gosh, there is something different about them. What is that? And so what we came up with, we're getting a little short on time, is a ministry called the Bethlehem Christmas Project. What we do is we take American, Israeli, and Palestinian believers, we put them together to deliver Christmas gifts to orphans, children with special needs, and children suffering from post-traumatic stress. We're there every December. We deliver gifts to about, I think last year was about close to 400 children. We work with the local church to encourage the local church. And we work with Israelis and Palestinians. We sit down, we have discussions, we talk about uncomfortable topics, kind of like we're doing, you know, tonight. We do this in Jerusalem, we do this in Nazareth. And, you know, what we do is, you know, I kind of just go through, like, the events of the year. Like, this year I'll be like, so, you know, how did it go with the whole tortillas and everything in the sea, you know? You know, and we have, you know, we talk about settlements, we talk about all the political things that affect people, and then we talk about, okay, all this is going on, how can we work together? Sometimes things get tense, sometimes... Oh, Jenny's laughing at me. This is bad. What did I do? I did. Yeah, I know. I know it's a flotilla. No. Look, if I go in and go, tell me about the flotillas that we saw. If I tell them, hey, tell me about the tortillas, immediately they're disarmed. So, I did. I wrote my Israeli friend, and I sat there. I said, "Hey, I hear there's some spicy tortillas in the sea. Are you planning an attack?" So. Anyhow, so I'm going to show you a quick video. What? I'm going to show you a quick video, and then we'll do a little Q&A. And then next week we'll talk a little bit more about engaging the Middle East, and if you want, maybe a little bit more about the conflict. So let me show you the video, and then we'll go from there.